Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Gallant Few Rangers podcast. My name is Mason Stewart and I'll be your host for our very special Premier League show. With me tonight, Mr. Jamie Rules. How are you, mate?
I've definitely had better weekends. Not as the highs as last weekend, but I'm still here. I'll take my licks either way, but glad to be here as ever.
Brilliant, mate. We'll come on to it a little while about that Liverpool result, but it was the last thing we said would happen on last week's show, but that's coming. Also here, because Liverpool have lost, Mr. Graham Campbell. How are you, Graham?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Always good to be on, obviously, after a weekend of no analysis and match of the day. I know the listening public are obviously desperate for our top-class analysis of the Premier League. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Well, Colin's not here tonight with us, but he would be absolutely struggling with that match of the day. I can tell you all that. He'll kill me for saying that. But, Jamie, let's get right into it then, because, as I said, we've got a lot to talk about as ever. I'm going to start with Arsenal, the league leaders, which, looking on paper yesterday, was a really tricky game away at Fulham. But they got the job done very early in the first half. First 45 minutes, game was won, 3-0 up. I've got to say, I thought Trossard was the best player on the pitch that first half. I think I said it at the time, he'd be a terrific signing. I know a lot of Arsenal fans were a bit disappointed they didn't get Mudryk, but for the money they got, Trossard, I think he's proven his worth.
Yeah, I think we called it when we were talking about Arsenal's transfer business back in January. The Trossard one was arguably one of the most sensible deals that they probably could have done when they were talking about what kind of money was on offer for the likes of Felix and Mudryk. I was very surprised with Fulham, but I wasn't yesterday. I was very surprised in the fact that how they were just so non-existent in that first half. However, they did call it a stat that apparently every game that the lad Paulinho's not been available, they've actually lost. So that's the fourth game now that he's not been able to play because of serving a suspension, and they've lost every single one of them. It shows, you know, how important some of these players can be for them. But Arsenal just feel like the juggernaut that's just not stopping right now, don't they? It kind of remind me when you go back to the time when Leicester won the league. You know, they just seem they all seem together. The way that they all interact with each other, the way they celebrate together, it means so much to them. And I think it's going to be very hard for them to not win this league. I think right now the way they're performing.
Yeah, I mean, again, we'll come to Man City, but I thought that game Sunday had a real And that was a real sticky one, but they didn't play like that. They played the team full of confidence. They actually become the first London side to win five consecutive London derbies away from home without conceding a goal. And they're breaking all kinds of records this season, Arsenal. Graham, what was your thoughts on Arsenal on Sunday? And I think the big touching point, I think Jamie just said it, we've said it, you know, quite a few weeks about Polina, and how big he's been for Fulham. But how impressed were you with Arsenal?
Yeah, majorly impressed. Fulham have obviously done really well so far this season. I think when you look back at Arsenal, they went in that wee runner. They hadn't won in four games. I know that included the FA Cup and two of the games were against Man City. But when you go all the way back to that game against Aston Villa a few weeks back where they turned that around to win 4-2, it's really been a catalyst. A few weeks later, they come from two back against Bournemouth to win with a 98th minute goal. So I think obviously that's done a lot to really get the belief. Not that I'm saying there wasn't belief there, but I think that, you know, when you're winning these tight games, when you go away to Leicester in between that and win 1-0 in a kind of scrappy game, those are the games that do, obviously cliched out my nut here, but they're the ones that win you titles. Yeah, we've spoke out of business. I'm still not overly sure Trossard in the long run is going to be an amazing signing by any means. But yeah, he played really well at the weekend. And that's now Gabriel Jesus back. So obviously we talked about squad depth for Arsenal, and I thought at the time, you know, that's one of those things when he went off injured, and you saw how long he was out, that was going to be the thing that derailed their title challenge. And they've got through all that, still top of the league, and now they're getting him back. So, you know, it really could now take a lot to actually stop Arsenal, where, you know, you're looking at maybe it being tough for them and a bit of inconsistency, but no, absolutely fair play to them. It just depends how we'll see how they balance the Europa League as well, because there's a lot of tough runs in that, and we'll see how they balance that with the league. I would imagine they'll start to prioritise fairly soon, but that'll be interesting to see.
No, definitely. And just I know it was said about Trossard there with the three assists, but Jamie, I see today there's a debate going on Sky Sports whether Odegaard is the best midfielder in the Premier League as it stands at the moment. What was your thoughts on that? Where do you stand on that
statement? I think that's a big call. What I do think is he's playing arguably his best football. We forget how young he actually is, but he's actually well-travelled and well-seasoned, but he's looking really, really mature. I was very surprised when they gave him the armband, when he signed his contract. But that's one of those masterstrokes that's actually worked really well for Arteta. He loves a challenge. He loves to get torn into it. But when he actually plays the ball, you see how silky he can be. He took his goal really, really well yesterday. You know, just that wee shimmy to the side when you think he's going to shoot it and does two more players and you think, that's classy. The lad's going to be brilliant. As you know, he's only going to get better. Best midfielder, I think he's a bit off that, just purely for the fact that he doesn't do it every week. I could probably say Saka. You would always put your money on getting shots on target, getting them run a goal. Same with Gabriel Martinelli. Odegaard, he's part of a midfield, is probably the best way to put it, as opposed to an orchestrating, you know, a title charge.
Not fair point, Graham. I'll ask you that. I'll come to you on that as well. Odegaard, are you having him as the top midfielder this season?
I think he's up there. I mean, it depends how you kind of what a top midfielder is to you, because certainly I think he's the most influential when you're talking about someone who plays in their own team. I think if Arsenal were to lose Odegaard, I mean, that would be a massive, massive loss for them. So sometimes it's not all about how good a player they are, but how influential they are for the team they play in. I think Odegaard is absolutely unbelievably influential for Arsenal. But in terms of him being a player, I think it would be silly to say he's not absolutely top class. Absolutely unbelievable playmaker, and he can spot passes that maybe others can't. So is he the best in the Premier League? I don't know. Don't know if I'd want to put my name to that, but I think he's definitely up there.
Yeah, no, I just thought I'd ask. That was one I see today. He was given the captaincy at the start of the season, and I was a little bit surprised by that, but he's definitely leading with his performances. Jamie, let's get straight onto it then. Bournemouth 1, Liverpool 0. Probably the biggest upset this weekend. As I said earlier, we actually joked about this last week that the result Liverpool had, and you said we're playing bottom of the league. It was your words.
It was early kickoff. Yep.
I'll come to Graham on the Bournemouth side of things, but it's only fair if I come to you in the Liverpool. What went wrong for Liverpool on Saturday?
Without rehashing the same excuses I've had throughout the season, I think it's plain and simple. We expected to turn up and just get 3 points, and we didn't. And I don't want to take anything away from Bournemouth. I think we said before it, Liverpool really good in the first 10 minutes. We had a goal disallowed. Van Dijk had a header that got cleared off the line. We were very, very positive. But then Bournemouth started to put passes together. The boy Outara and Billing started to kind of run at Trent. They started to double up on him, and it became really exposed really quick. Van Dijk, for whatever reason, shows the boy Outara out to the side of the box, which is what you're meant to do, but then stops his run. I don't know whether he's thinking Andy Robertson's going to carry on the run, but he stops, which gives Outara that space to run in and put the pass in. And you just think, that's not a Van Dijk type of challenge. That's, everything just doesn't seem right at the moment. Everything from, I'm not going to give Salah shit for missing a penalty. He's not missed too many for us, in the history of him being at Liverpool. It was just the typical example of the day. We typically expected the penalty to go in. It went 10 metres wide. It's still going now. We anticipated 3 points. We didn't even get 1 point. The only stat that I would call out is there's two stats that are going around right now. One is that's the fifth time we've wore that strip and we've not won once in it yet. So whether that's the curse of the strip, who knows? Two, we've played five 12:30 kickoffs this season, and we've lost three of them and drew two of them. So we're not a fan of the early kickoff this season. We're not a fan of that top. So I know Klopp in previous years has always ridiculed this fixture because of obviously the European football. I'm not going to say that's the excuse, but I think it's a classic case of we expected to get 3 points. We didn't do it. We didn't work half as good as we should have. And all credit went to Bournemouth.
Yeah, definitely. Graham, on a Bournemouth side of things, what a huge win. You touched on it earlier there about their, Arsenal's 98th minute winner against them last week and how they'd have been feeling after that, after a really good performance at the Emirates, to be fair. But they've gone and backed it up with a big win, getting themselves off the bottom of the table. And Billing was the man to lead them, and he had a really good game on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. I think out of anyone on this Premier League show, I've definitely been maybe the most critical of Gary O'Neill. I still think he's not a great manager. I still think Bournemouth are going to go down. I'm not saying they'll go down without a fight. I think what the weekend showed, and yeah, at the Emirates, is they do have, a lot of team spirit. I think probably the players maybe are buying into Gary O'Neill. Fair play. It was a good performance, but it's one of those that, Liverpool had their chances, penalty aside, and they had the absolute lion's share of possession stats. One of those days for Liverpool, I think. And obviously, I didn't know that what Jamie's just said about their inability to get the results from a 12:30 the strip. I don't know how much that plays into it when I think of any issues with strips in Man U with that grey one all those years ago. That's maybe the only time I've ever heard any kind of meaningful unluckiness with a strip. But look, it was a great result. I think the biggest thing that came out is obviously David Brooks for Bournemouth, who's back after like a year and a half after being diagnosed with stage 2 lymphoma. So I think that was amazing, and I think what a day for Bournemouth and David Brooks' enemy.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, glad you brought up David Brooks there. It's not something I've had sort of written down there, but what a player he looked a few years ago, and hopefully he can come back and start playing his best stuff again. But Jamie, I will end the Liverpool, this Liverpool chat. I still think you'll get top four, mate. So We'll leave it at that.
Well, I think our next four fixtures, you need to close your eyes if you look at those fixtures. I think we've got Chelsea, Man City and Arsenal in that order, either side of the international break. So I said to you earlier, I'll just take a 5-1 win against Real Madrid and I'll be happy with the season can be done and dusted. So, yeah, I need the season over and done with.
It would be so Liverpool to go there and get a result. it would be so Liverpool to go there and get a result, wouldn't it? But but Graham, I'll come to you. Palace 0, Man City 1. That was the late game Saturday night. Haaland, 28 goals, got him out of trouble. It was a real, playing against the low block, and I think they struggled for most of it. Palace looked quite comfortable at times defensively, but they've now failed to have a shot on target for 3 consecutive games. And they're the first team to do it since 2004. So it just goes to show how they're struggling for goals. But a big, big win for City this one.
Huge win for City. The kind of game where if you're an Arsenal fan, you're just like, oh, going to fuck off. Like, it's one of those, you just want your nearest rivals to drop points and they go and kind of scrape that 1-0 game, as you said. They certainly didn't look comfortable, for sure. As for Palace, I mean, not just that they've not registered a win yet in 2023. That's 11 games. I think we've spoke about them a few times that they really need to start gathering points when you look at the Premier League and how close this relegation battle is going to be. I really fear for Palace. And I think that, looking at their next couple of games, 2 or 3 games, I don't see how Vieira lasts that much longer because they are really in free fall. You cannot go into the middle of March having not won any games yet and be this close to scuttling with relegation and not expect any consequences. So, I mean, if I'm a Palace fan, I'm definitely feeling it a bit. And if I'm Patrick Vieira, I'm thinking my time's got to be close to being up here.
It's a really interesting point, that Jamie. We've spoke about Palace a few times on this show, and we've always sort of said they'll be all right over the last few weeks. But each week, as Graham said, that's 11 games now without a win. I think it's 5 defeats, 6 draws. So they're really, really struggling. I've got on my mum's side, they're all Palace fans, but none of them want Vieira to go. There's been that's one section, but there's not a lot of Palace fans that I've sort of come across that are saying no, he's got to go, which is quite strange. What's your thoughts on Vieira and this situation he's got here at Palace?
I think the biggest challenge is that they campaigned so hard to get rid of Roy Hodgson. The style of play under Roy Hodgson was really negative, playing with so many midfielders that kind of cancelled out any forward play. I think with Vieira, they're so desperate for it to work for him, but the reality of it is they don't spend anywhere near the same money as anybody else. I think I've seen something the other day that they spent 41 million over the last 2 seasons bringing in players. We spoke the other day, Bournemouth spent 50 million in one window there. Not to say that they're getting anything better, but I just mean the purse that they're playing with is totally, totally different. What we did say, though, if you go back a few weeks, we did actually say that if Palace stay up, they're going to stay up by keeping clean sheets. They're not going to stay up by scoring goals. Graham's right that, the next 2 games are Brighton and Arsenal. But after then, you've got a run of Leicester, Leeds, I think it's Aston Villa. Those are the kind of games that they're going to be expecting to get something from. I don't see Vieira getting punted. I really don't. You said yourself, the fans don't seem to be on his case. Their acceptance that they know they're not playing great. But I think they're the same. They expect Palace to start putting some together results. I think the fact Zaha's back will change that. The one thing I'll say about Palace, it's not like they get steamrolled by anybody. They've not been picking up, they're not getting these chances, but they're not conceding loads of goals. Man City at the weekend, for example, they struggled to keep that 1-0. They probably could have been 2 or 3, but Palace were really good. I think it goes down to the keeper. The keeper's really good. Ever since he came in, Guaita, he's been absolutely top-notch for me. The defence seems to work well, and you can name their same defenders each week. It's not like they're chopping and changing. I still think they'll get out of it. They just kind of... It's kind of like Bournemouth at the weekend. They had a few games where they were in and out of it. They just need them 3 points. The moment they get 3 points, they could probably then get on the positives and kind of put a run together. But I'm just looking at the fixture list now, and I think they've got Brighton, Arsenal, Leicester, Leeds, Southampton, Everton, Wolves. They kind of need to get past that Arsenal game. And then I think when they start putting that run together, they'll be fine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think you make a really good point about the budget of Palace, because I think it does have to sort of come into play. And the amount of players that they've had to sort of renew because they can't go out and buy, you know, players that teams where, to be fair, they're punched above their waist for quite a long time, Palace. The type of club they are, I think the owner's always, Steve Parish, you know, fantastic owner, but he's always been very open at that. And he always says, every year in the Premier League, we are punching above our weight, and it's about sort of building on that. So that's probably where the fan pressure is not sort of toiling. It is because they are quite realistic, which you don't get with a lot of fan bases.
I think for me, the reason I say about Vieira is because those run of games Jamie's just alluded to. I mean, they've not won in 2023, I'll say again. And when you look at some of the teams that they've not been able to beat in that run, especially most recent, you're talking about Brighton, Brentford, Villa. These are still games, as good and solid as these teams are. That's a Premier League for you. You need to be picking up points in these games. And when we say the next one's Brighton, then Arsenal, Leicester, Leeds, that's our next four. Brighton and Arsenal are away right now. You cannot see them picking up anything. And then suddenly you go into Leicester at home and Leeds away. I don't think Patrick Vieira, and I know what you're saying, you know, you live down south, part of your family's Palace fans, that side, that's fair enough. So you'll know more about the in-depth feeling of the Palace fans than I do, which is fair enough. So I totally trust what you're saying. But how long does that kind of goodwill last with Vieira and four games down the road if they've still not won and you're coming into the games against the teams in the bottom half of the league? That's where I think it'll be interesting to see the Palace fans feel then.
Do you not think, see, because of what happened with Leeds and Southampton when they got rid of their manager, like that whole merry-go-round of trying to bring somebody in, do you not think that would scare some of them now? So I completely agree. You know, if Palace don't win four in the next four games, Vieira's on a tight rope. But who do they bring in at that stage of the window? They, you know, there could be that fear that they might just give it till the end of the season and see where the chips lie. I don't know whether that's just kind of skewed people's thought processes, if you like.
Yeah, I don't know who they would bring in just now. That's obviously not something I've thought too much about. And obviously with Southampton and Leeds, yeah, they've both went with bizarre choices in Southampton. I don't think they've even made Celes official. I think with Palace though, that can't really matter because how long does this winless streak go? You can't just give Vieira till the end of the season because you know, he's Patrick Vieira. I think you would then hope for a new manager bounce. I think Palace have a lot of really, really decent, good players. And you know, at this point of the season, how tight it is down there, I think they'll need to make a tough decision sooner than later, unless they do an immediate turnaround, which I just cannot see when they're on this run.
It's a really interesting one with Palace because they've under Parish as well, they've gone on the different type of managers. So they had Allardyce and then they went Frank de Boer. That was a complete utter nightmare. Then they went and, you know, went back to Roy Hodgson and it was what they knew and he was the safe choice. And to be fair, he done really well there. I thought Vieira done really well last season. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Graham. I mean, that goodwill only lasts so long. But I get the sense that Palace are that type of club where it's, I don't think they'll be, even in the next four, I don't think they'll be screaming for him to go. I'm with Jamie. I think that Parish will look at it and go, who can we get in here? Because I think that there's the type of managers like your Dyches, your Allardyces, they're sort of a thing of the past now. Obviously apart from Dyche. So where do realistically you go? And I think you're taking that, as you said, that gamble to just get a sort of instant impact from a manager to get some points. I think they'll stick with Vieira.
What I actually didn't realise, now I'm just going into 2023, just looking back now, Palace have only won one competitive game since the 9th of November. So, I mean, obviously I totally get we stopped for the World Cup. However, that was still two or three games before the start for the World Cup you're talking about. Since the 9th of November, they won one game. I mean, fair play to the Palace fans, they're completely behind them. But I do find it strange the lack of time Frank de Boer got. I get disaster is said, etc. But memory serves me right, he got like four Premier League games. Now we're talking about Patrick Vieira, who's won one Premier League game in whatever it is, you know, 11, 12, 13 games. I just don't understand what I'm missing, but hey, I'm not a Palace fan, so good luck to them.
It is two different feelings. We'll come on to West Ham again a little bit later, but the two differences of managers and feelings around the managers are night and day. But Jamie, moving it on, Man United dropped points yesterday against Southampton. Really poor result for Man United, but maybe Southampton fans will be feeling different at full time because they missed some really good chances yesterday. Before we sort of get into the game, I just want to quickly ask both of you, do you think Casemiro's tackle was a red card?
Yes, all day long. That's all day long. No, it's completely, completely a red card. 100% he wins the ball, but he wins the ball with his studs up. It catches the shin. I don't see how anybody can argue that different. I really don't. I think, take away the fact he's 2 footer off the floor, take away the fact he's legs straight, he studs the shins. You know, he goes over the ball. It's a bit of a knock on, but the fact he's actually doing that is a red card attempt, in my opinion.
Yeah, Graham, what was your thoughts on that red card?
Absolutely. I've just re-pulled it up as well because there's a still picture. Obviously, I don't think I'll be able to show you guys, but there's just a picture of where he has went over the ball and his studs are about kind of middle leg.
It's like top of the shin, isn't it? It's like top of the shin, bud.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, pretty much. So, I mean, when you're looking at that, you know, immediately when you go over the ball like that, it's seen as reckless. I think probably for me, the only surprise was that the ref doesn't actually send them off straight away. So
I think he gave him a yellow, didn't he?
Yeah, he gave him a yellow. So I do think it was a red. And I do feel like we're here talking about Casemiro. And I don't know, I feel like one of the last times I was on, we're talking about Casemiro. a bit silly. However, he is so vital. He is extremely vital for Man U. And I think Man U fans, again, they would cry out for somebody that goes and gets sent off a few times a season, but somebody as influential, as vital to their team as Casemiro is, you got to take the bad with the good.
Best stat of the weekend was Casemiro's last three Premier League games were red card, 7-0 and red card. Not bad for player of the season, huh?
No, the reason why I wanted to ask both of you is because I've read a lot. I know Twitter can be an absolutely mental place at the best of times, but so many Man United fans are arguing against it, and for me, it's a red card all day long.
So the argument that I seen was that they were trying to compare it to João Felix's one in the Leicester game, and they're two totally different tackles, in my opinion. The João Felix one's borderline as well, in my opinion, but it's a lot lower down. It's more towards the ankle, more the foot. Casemiro's foot should never be up at anybody's kneecap, just at the, you know, regardless of what it is. So, yeah, I think they're onto plums with that one.
Yeah, no, I can't. And every tackle is different, and every incident's different. That bringing up other tackles is just typical Man United. But anyway, Jamie, on the actual game itself, Southampton, as I said, you know, good point for them. That's 3 out of 4 clean sheets for the new manager, by the way. Didn't realize
stealing my start. I had no one prepped.
didn't actually realize that. So that sat there today, I was like, that's you know, he's done well. But I feel like for them, it will be 2 points they should have had in the end with the chances that they missed. Is that a fair analysis?
What was surprised? So I wasn't watching the game because I was watching. I think I was watching the Arsenal game. It was on at the same time. But I remember checking the Bet365 and you know the scoreboard, the live scores. Southampton roll over them before Casemiro's red card. You know, for shots and possession, Southampton actually went there and you know tried to put on a display. I was more impressed with that they actually had the balls to do that away from home, go to the Old Trafford against arguably one of the most informed teams in the league at the moment, and have a go at them. Casemiro's tackle or not, I think Southampton did really, really well. yes, there was chances at the end where they should have put them away and actually got themselves 3 points. I hate to admit it, though, but they're starting to prove us wrong a little bit. You know, as you said, 3 clean sheets out of 4. Graham's not a big fan of the manager, we know that, but they're starting to prove a lot of doubters wrong at the moment. And it's, you know, it's whether they can keep going on that. I don't know what their fixture list looks like. I think Graham sent it out earlier. But the fact they're even keeping clean sheets, I'm more impressed with, because that was probably their downfall. I've seen a couple of the players recently who've been playing really good. I've got a lot of time for the lad in the middle of the park, Alvarez. He's a cracking player, him. I think he scored 2 games ago. I think he scored in the Wolves game, I think it was. He seems to have a bright future, a young lad, writing about the challenges, but box to box in his approach. And I quite like the other lads. Is it Lavia? He seems to play well when he's got the ball as well. I don't know whether we're saying Southampton are going to be safe, but they've definitely turned it up the last few weeks, which I'm glad to see, because they were in danger of just free falling and kind of getting cut away from the rest. But yes, they'll see it as a point gained, but they could have easily have had 3 points gained at the weekend.
Absolutely. No, you're right, Damien. They do actually have some good young players. I just think that experience, ones they've got, you know, Theo Walcott, for instance, when I see him play a strong goal yesterday, I just thought, he's not scoring. And he knew he weren't scoring himself. So I think that sort of sums up Walcott. But Graham, on a Man United side of it, that's two really, you know, obviously last week's disaster result against Liverpool and then a home game against Southampton, which you expect them to go out and get 3 points. Can we truly say now that's them at the title race?
Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure really who thought they were totally in the title race. I think they would have to go on a real more of a run, certainly, to make up for a poor start of the season. I think that's not take away. Ten Hag's done brilliantly so far. Like, he really got rid of Ronaldo, obviously. That was a massive thing for the dressing room and morale, and really boosted the team. But just a quick turnaround and to have them where they are and you know, performances in Europe. I know they're obviously in Europa League, which is really strong this year. To put out Barcelona, who are top of La Liga, I mean, they're in a really good place. And I think if you're a Man U fan, you will be excited for the next season or two, because Ten Hag's really going to shape his team again during the summer and maybe get rid of some more of that deadwood. So I don't think it was ever going to be a league title season. However, they've already won the first cup available to them this season, and Europa League looks like a real possibility. I think Man United fans should be pretty happy so far, to be honest. I think they'll be gearing up for next season when it comes to the Premier League.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you're right. We said it a couple of weeks ago about Ten Hag, but I think that they're on to, again, his recruitment this summer is going to be absolutely huge. Who he gets in and who he gets rid of. But he doesn't seem like a manager that sort of is going to mince his words, which I think Man United have needed for a long time. But I agree with you in terms of the title race. I don't think they were realistically ever in it, because Rashford's goals was always going to dry up at some point. And that's what was getting them by for a lot of them games. Jamie, moving it on then. West Ham 1, Aston Villa 1. West Ham now unbeaten in 10 against Villa. But they could have really have done with 3 points here, and the noise down here at the moment is that Moyes isn't going to last. Jose Mourinho's name was getting thrown around a bit, quite a lot today, and I thought I'd throw that one in because I've seen it in quite a few group chats today. Would he leave Roma to come back to West Ham where they are? That's another question, but poor result for West Ham, in all honesty.
Yeah, I think the only way Jose Mourinho comes to West Ham is if he gets a permanent ban in the Italian league. If he keep getting sent off, then he can't be allowed to be stood at the side anymore and he has to leave. I don't buy the Mourinho thing. I just think he's not even yesterday. I think he's just so 10 years ago in terms of what his style is like. I don't think West Ham fans truly want Mourinho in. I think they're just looking for anybody but Moyes at the moment. And we kind of touched on it earlier. You know, if Palace get rid of Patrick Vieira, who realistically they're looking at? Everybody keeps talking about Pochettino, but he's not going to come to a West Ham, in my opinion. So straight away you're going, well, okay, well, who's next up? And you're talking Zidane, Allegri. You know, these are people that are not going to come to West Ham, in my opinion. I still think Moyes is the best person for them. There just seems to be a bit of indecisiveness with how his team is playing. I mean, you know how West Ham are always going to set up, but the fact that they can't get strikers to score goals at the moment, you know, he actually, I think he said something quite troubling about his new signing Scamatta the other day. He said that, which is quite worrying, that he does all the running, but his physical stats don't match up to where they expect him to be. So that tells you something's not right behind the scenes. And it's obviously he has been missing. Whether he's traditionally Italian and eating too much pasta and he's a bit bloated up, I don't know, but he just doesn't seem right. That Moyes would be kind of calling him out like that. But we said a couple of weeks ago when they won, when they scored four, when Jared Bowen plays well, West Ham play well. When Jared Bowen doesn't get a good game, then they kind of all go missing. I actually had Villa and McCoupin at the weekend because I fully expected West Ham to not win. I was surprised they actually got the equaliser back in. But a crazy stat is that Berrino actually had, was it Barami, sorry? Actually had five shots on target. That's not bad for a midfielder when you're looking at your bets and trying to figure out what to put on. So it tells you they're getting there, but for whatever reason, they're not going in.
By the way, Benarama, I was actually got jotted down here. I watched the game yesterday. He was the best player on the pitch by a country mile yesterday. Benarama, he was really, really bright for West Ham, but they just didn't have enough. You're Bowen, who was getting the goals from last season, goals have dried up. Midfield is just, you know, it's just pretty average.
The midfield's traditionally, they're not box to box. I mean, Paqueta is probably the only one that you would say is a more of a flair player. You know, Rice is not a flair player. Soucek's not a flair player. You know, you struggle to find where that connectivity is. Especially from attacking piece. That's why Antonio and everybody used to start doing well, because they would be bombing on from the midfield up to the forward line. But yeah, they're really struggling with a striker. They're just not getting it right. And big shout out to Watkins, obviously, for Villa, who's been doing absolutely brilliant.
Leads us nicely then, Graham, onto to Villa's side of it. Emery, impressive. You know, I think it's one loss in six away from home for him. Aston Villa, I said last week, he scored in every game. They've scored again. That was a good one for the coupon this weekend, both teams to score. Watkins scores again. What's been your thoughts on Emery and Villa? And again, I think they felt a little bit disappointed they didn't come out with 3 points yesterday.
Yeah, good so far. I do feel like the amount of money that Villa have spent and the kind of size of our club, where they are just now in the league, feels right. I'm not sure, but we've spoke before how easy it will be for them to really push much further forward, maybe into the kind of top half of the table. But other than that, I'm honestly not sure what Emery's expected to achieve. Certainly, the results are more in line with what you'd expect when you look at their starting 11, when you look at their squad. And yeah, obviously, their strikers are absolutely flaming hot form just now, which helps. But yeah, look, Emery's class, and I do think it does give a nudge to some teams, maybe, when we're talking about, you know, teams that are thinking about getting rid of their managers, that yeah, maybe looking at you know, a foreigner with a good pedigree could be the trick. I think when we talk out West Ham, I think some of those names that I mentioned are absolute fallacy, though. There is no way that is ever going to be the case. I think Under Moyes, when you do actually look down into the results, they're not horrible. They're drawing a lot of games, but they are picking up wins here and there. I think just now it's just because it's so tight down at the bottom of the table. There are so many teams battling relegation. I think, honestly, unless you're in form like Palace, for example, I think some of the other teams at this point, when you're kind of like West Ham picking up draws, the occasional wins still in Europe, I don't think the board are going to want to sack David Moyes, so I think it'll be interesting, and I think it's a case of who moves first down there, because of course it's a gamble when it's so tight and no one's an absolute surefire to go down just now. So yeah, I'm really interested to see what clubs are going to do, and it's interesting when we talk about Palace fans being happy with Vera, but no, the other end that Moyes, you know, he can't do it right just now, maybe under West Ham fan opinion. So yeah, it's interesting now. As I say, look, the biggest excitement for me is this relegation battle, and I really hope that it stays like this until the end of the season. Obviously, I'm sure if I'm a fan of one of those seven clubs or whatever, I'm feeling utterly sick. But as an outsider, it's so good to see.
No, absolutely. You make a really good point there about Palace and the West Ham fans. And that's, as I said, I'm both sides. So West Ham, all you know, family and close friends of West Ham or the other side, sort of Palace. So I do get both. And you sort of, I'm sitting in the middle going, they're deluded and they're mental. And you're right in saying sort of the names that get thrown about for the West Ham fans. But yesterday it made me laugh. Someone sort of local said, why don't we just go and get Poch? Give Poch to the end of the season. I'm just like, you are absolutely bonkers. That's what you live with. That's what you live with down here. But Graham, but I just want to finish on that, because me and Jamie have done it over and over. I think you basically answered it anyway there. But would you sack David Moyes right now?
No. I wouldn't, and I know that I don't know if I'm coming across hypocritical when I'm talking about I'd sack Vieira. I get it, right? But these are two very different managers. Moyes has a hell of a lot of experience, and I think he has, in general, done a really good job with West Ham. I don't see under any circumstance West Ham getting relegated with David Moyes as a manager. I really don't. I think they will pick up more than enough points to see them safe. I can't say the same with Palace under Vera. So I'm not trying to be hypocritical. I just personally, I wouldn't sack David Moyes, but listen, that's just me.
Graham, just one thing for you real quick. So I'm just checking there. So Palace are 3 points ahead of West Ham. West Ham have scored 3 more goals, but let in 1 more goal. But you'd sack Palace manager before you'd sack the West Ham manager.
As I say, though, I mean, Moyes
does play devil's advocate.
Moyes, like, I know. Moyes does have history with West Ham, though. He's done a lot last season. They did excellent. I think they did above expectation. And sometimes you can see it can be tough for teams to challenge, to be in the Premier League and go in Europe as well. And they're obviously in the last stages of the Conference League as well. I think he's got more than enough experience in looking at their form, looking at their next few fixtures. I think if they want rid of him, their next two fixtures, couple of home games, very, very winnable, certainly. You'd be looking at least a minimum of 4 points. I think if he's going to go, then it'll maybe be after those two. We'll see.
Absolutely. I'm with you with this one, Graham, definitely. In that side, I'd keep Moyes. Jamie, moving it on then. Leicester 1, Chelsea 3. Leicester have lost their 16th Premier League game of the season so far. Rodgers' run continues. Not what they needed. Again, they just feel like they're just getting dragged in and dragged out sort of every other week at the minute here. But we'll stay with Leicester. And we haven't spoken to Graham in a while about Graham Potter, so we'll come with me and you have done that over and over. But we'll stay with Leicester then. Daka scored a really good goal. By the way, they weren't terrible at the weekend. They offered a lot more in attack than they did the week before against Arsenal, but still just defensively nowhere near good enough.
What's mad as well is that they're currently sitting 16th. They're the only team in the bottom seven to have not picked up at least a point at the weekend. Now, granted, they're playing Chelsea, but it's probably typical of what's happening with Leicester right now. We said that, you know, they're starting to get dragged into it. The murmurings are starting to kick in about, we're talking about managerial, like there's massive rumours about Brendan Rodgers at the moment. And the crazy one I heard is that apparently they're looking to appoint Jamie Vardy as player coach for until the end of the season, because of apparently the hierarchy in the club are not, they're worried that why Rodgers is suddenly not playing him. Probably got something to do with the fact he's like 47 years old and probably only scored about 3 goals a season. But it looks like Rodgers is trying to do without Vardy and play with any Iheanacho and Daka and co. when in reality it's probably Madison that controls how well Leicester do on their day. The Faye red card just kind of put the nail in the coffin for the remainder of the game, really. It's one of them ones you could have seen coming, the way he was kind of lunging into the challenges. It was just a typical defender trying to catch the ball before it went past him, really. But I think the writing's on the wall for Rodgers at the moment. I think they're in massive danger of, I think, the 2 points away from Tottenham, Southampton, 22 and 24 points. They just need to get Madison firing, in my opinion. And it won't help them with all the rumours going around about Brendan Rodgers' future.
No, I think we both said last week, didn't we, that he won't be there next season, whatever happens.
He's the one. I was shocked when I heard it that apparently he is the second favourite to take over at Tottenham.
Bonkers.
That's absolutely bonkers, in my opinion. But for some reason, apparently Daniel Levy's got a hard on for him. So apparently there's, he's second favourite to take over at Tottenham, which would absolutely astound me.
It just goes to show at the minute, in terms of managers, there's not. You're trying to pick managers at the minute for it's a struggle. Even at the top, you're going, who's available? And even we're talking about Pochettino's, etc. You know, for your big club, big clubs, you're still going, he hasn't won anything. So, I wouldn't be surprised to see Rodgers at Spurs, in all honesty. It would not surprise me. Graham, on the Chelsea side of things, how have you sort of, what's your thoughts on Graham Potter's Chelsea? They went into the game at the weekend with a run of eight away games, easy for me to say, without a win before that one. For Chelsea to go that long sort of summed up their troubles. But they put in probably their best performance of the season. Under Potter against Borussia Dortmund midweek. I thought they were very, very good. And then they backed it up with, a 3-1 win away from home.
Yeah, I think we'd said before about Potter that, for someone of Potter's stature in the game, the kind of comings and goings in January with some of the massive egos and huge transfers that came in, it was potentially always going to be difficult for him to, and whether that was a case to win over the dressing room, or if there was just too many egos, or the squad was just too heavy, he also had injuries to contend with. Obviously, from a Chelsea fan point of view, they wanted to see results turn around. Of course they did, because of the players they brought in, because of the money they spent. I think I personally do like Graham Potter. I'm glad to see that their owner is giving him time. And it does sound like from other sports that he's invested in, that is something that he does with his coaches. And I think he's smart to do that. I think they maybe potentially wrote this season off from a Premier League point of view, but have kind of given him the benefit of the doubt and want to see how he does, especially to the end of the season, and give him maybe a good whack of next season. But that's now three wins on the bounce, including turning around a deficit in the Champions League against a strong Borussia Dortmund team. So I really do think it could be on that for them, although I think we've said that a few times. A few teams, you think they're going to start picking up wins and they'll go on a run. For example, Leicester, they've now lost, say, the last five games, but before that they'd won 4-5 or 3-4, it was something like that. And you think, right, they're going to turn that around. So I don't know, it's a bit of a wacky season in that. To be perfectly honest with you, there's a lot of surprise results. But I do fancy Chelsea to... I don't think anyone would have thought Chelsea were going to finish 10th. I think maybe a 6th or 7th for them, maybe in a strong end to the season. But we'll see. Certainly, from a point of view of liking Graham Potter, I'm glad he's turned that around, because I do think some of the stuff getting aimed at him, especially from the media, has been a bit harsh.
No, I agree. I just think it's going to come with what Abramovich built at Chelsea. I know he's not there anymore, and you make a really good point about the current owner. I just think that's what's come to, what's happened at Chelsea. I watched the extended highlights the weekend there, and I just think Kovacic is such a good player. I just think he's just injuries. If he's fit every week, he is top notch, and he makes such a difference.
And I need to say, that Havertz goal, I... enjoyed that very much. That was absolutely class. And I think, again, he gets a lot of criticism, especially the role he's given within the team. He's very much the, he is essentially number nine, but we know that's not him. That's really not his game. And Chelsea are, of course, crying out for it. But for him to step up and that finish is absolutely something he can do in it. Oh, it was so class, so tidy, brilliant to watch.
Yeah, it really was. Just want to, you know, both on Havertz and Kovacic, just want to see it more. Jamie, moving it on then, Leeds 2-2 with Brighton this weekend. We said about Leeds the week before, just need to get goals. They got two, but they also conceded two, and they could have conceded more. Brighton, we actually spoke in length last week about Brighton's home record. I think they've lost one in the last six, but their away record, they've got the best current run of away form in the Premier League at the minute, which again, when I see it today, I was like, you know, they're absolutely flying. But Leeds drop into the relegation zone, and again, with, you know, I do think, I know there's probably eight teams I said this about, but I do really think Leeds could go down this season.
I think the one thing that Leeds have got going for them, and you know, you said to it, is they do score goals. We thought they might struggle without Rodrigo, but then Harrison pops up, Bamford pops up, so they like to make a mockery of us, whatever we try and predict. But whilst they're scoring goals, they'll be within chances of getting 3 points. In reality, they always, you can tell the way they go about it. They have that philosophy of, if you score two, we'll score three, and try and go out with that attitude. Whereas Palace, for example, are totally different. Palace are all about keeping it tight, keeping your shape, don't concede. Leeds are the exact opposite. I'm not surprised to see them drop into the bottom three, but I think that's more to do with the other teams than it is Leeds. And I think Leeds will be typically yo-yoing in and out, very similar to what West Ham have been doing. I think while they're scoring goals, I think they should be fine. The moment the goals will dry up, they're not picking up points, in my opinion. But I didn't see a 2-2 coming. I thought Brighton might have got a sneaky away win because of the run that they've been on. But again, 2-2 doesn't surprise me. And Harrison's goal was an absolute pearler. But again, he's another one that just doesn't do it consistently enough. I think two seasons ago, Jack Harrison was like arguably one of the quickest, quickest in the league and getting assists. And he was in about everything. But for some reason, he's just kind of went off the boil. He kind of needs to get that rhythm back. Bamford's now starting to put a run of games together, so he kind of starts to need to get that as well. I don't think you can say much more about Leeds. I think as long as they're scoring goals, they'll still be picking up points. I'd be more worried if they weren't scoring them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And even Bamford's goal, I had to watch it back a couple of times. I didn't realise it took a big deflection, but there's something about a goal that hits the bar and goes in it. It just looked incredible. But Graham, on a Brighton side of things, they were obviously, you know, watching the game back there, they were disappointed to come off the pitch to draw two, which goes to show how far they've sort of come. The player that I picked out is Alex McAllister. Do you think he'll be there next season? Because I think he's got a big move coming.
I think if Brighton's transfer record has anything to go with it, no. They do have a nice hobby of losing all their best players, but somehow continue to kind of plunge above their weight despite all the outgoings from the, not just their team, but obviously their managers, their sporting directors, etc. So obviously the highlights from Hatch the Day, as you mentioned earlier, weren't the most in-depth, and I didn't see any extended highlights for this game, but from what I'd taken from it, Brighton should have been long out of reach for Leeds, and probably a really big point for Leeds in the long run. I think what you're saying about Leeds as well, I mean, they got Xavi Grazia. I just don't understand what's going on when we talk about the managers and manager appointments. I don't understand what they're thinking with that. I mean, yeah, okay, I'm sure they'll be hoping that they're approved right and hiring them, but I do fancy that, yeah, it's hard. There's a lot of clubs down there, as we've said, but yeah, Leeds are in real danger like the rest of them. But I don't know, man. Xavi Grazia, I don't see how he turns that. He puts together a run of wins that are going to keep them up. So yeah, it'll be interesting. But look, Brighton, yeah, brilliant. And as you say, I guess for them it's just all about keeping all their best players, but I don't see it.
No, I'm the same, and I'm with you as well with Garcia. I just thought that was a mental appointment. Crazy agreed to it in terms of he probably won't get the job next season, whatever happens, but that's for a different podcast altogether. Jamie, back to other action then. Newcastle, big win for them yesterday. They beat Wolves 2-1. Again, I'm going to do the same as I did with Casemiro. I'm going to come to both of you with the big talking point from that game. Should Nick Pope have given away a penalty? And also, should he have been sent off?
Absolutely speechless that wasn't given. I think I don't get it at all. If that is any other player, any other part of the pitch, it's a straight free kick. The fact it was in the box means it should have been a penalty. The fact it was the goalkeeper, I just don't get that at all. I heard a narrative that apparently because of Howard Webb's direction, which is they want less VAR, they want more on-field decisions. So because it wasn't clear as day, they wanted to stick with the ref's decision. In my opinion, the ref bottled it and waited for VAR to try and help him out. So that completely negates the fact of what he was trying to do. I think any ref looking back at that will be absolutely stunned to understand how we even got to that decision. I think it was arguably worse than the one he did against Liverpool when he clawed the ball back in. But yeah, to me, he should have walked. That should have given Newcastle an opportunity to get back on top, back on level. I was massively surprised. And you know what? See, when you see it live, you go straight away. You go, ooh. See, when you watch the slow mo, and they always say slow mo will make it worse. The slow mo is where you catch, he drops the shoulder in.
Yeah.
You don't see that real time. It's only when they do the slow mo, he drops the shoulder in to body check him, which means he completely meant it. So yeah, for me, that's a red card. I'm stunned he didn't give it. But a big win for Newcastle. The last goal was on the 11th of February. Scored by Almiron against Bournemouth. So, you know, wasn't just about the 3 points, it was actually about getting them back on, getting the goals back on for them as well. A good day all round for Newcastle, but for me, one very lucky.
Absolutely.
I've got to jump in on the penalty. Look, I think, yes, he's lucky, but I actually think when you look at the slow-mo, I actually think it's a bit of a defence for Pope, because if you look at that slow-mo, I really do think that Jimenez throws himself more into Pope than anything else. Like, I think if Jimenez doesn't move like that, he gets the ball and he scores. I think.
Do you think that's a free kick anywhere else in the pitch?
By the way, I'm not saying I'm not saying it's not a penalty. I'm just saying that. I'm just saying that. I think when you look at the slow mo, I don't think it's as damning as you've just made out. I think Jimenez, genuinely, I think it's a penalty, but I think Jimenez could have got past him and scored. That's what I'm saying. I think there's a wee bit of.
I thought you were trying to make a case for it. No, it was just.
Not as damning the replay. I honestly think Jimenez could have actually got past Pope and scored. I really do. I think. Yeah, it was a howler, absolutely, from the ref, etc. But I do feel like it's one of those Jimenez could have actually scored from, but there you go.
I actually said that at the time. I thought Jimenez was obviously just, which players do, he's just trying to get the penalty and sending off, and that's what he's tried to do. But I think you're spot on, but it's definite red card for me. I think you can tell by Pope's reaction as well when he sort of looked scared at the referee. And he looked dodgy yesterday with the ball at his feet.
It was a couple of times before it, wasn't it, where he lost the pass out, he kept out of the touch. But that would have been him, the same as Casemiro. He would have been banned for the next four games, which really, really would have put Newcastle on the back foot.
No, absolutely. And Graham, just on the game itself, Jamie said they're a massive, massive win for Newcastle because they've been sort of struggling since the World Cup. They've gone back to fifth after that win yesterday. The player again I picked out of this one was Trippier. Some of his deliveries are absolutely top draw, and they look dangerous from every set piece, whether it be corners or free kicks just outside the box. You've just got that feeling that they're going to score from him.
Yeah, he's got a smoking hot right foot on him. For sure, his set pieces are class. I honestly think that's what's kept him at the top level, certainly at this point. I'm not overly certain there's too much more about him in his game, personally, and especially his age he's at. But yeah, no taking away, like he's dangerous from set pieces for sure. And yeah, as you said, a big win for Newcastle. They've been on a more kind of poor inconsistent run. But again, they've already been over and above expectations this season. I think if any Newcastle are to be asked like getting to a cup final and actually challenging for the top four, I think they would have looked at that as a really successful season. I think it would, the proof will be nipped next season, because again, it'll be interesting to see how their summer window goes and kind of what players are going to bring in. Some of the people they've been linked to have been really interesting. So I think it's a big summer on them, and then we'll see what them and Eddie Howe are really made of next season. So that'll be interesting. But yeah, a big win for them to kind of get them back on track and see how the rest of the season pans out.
No, absolutely. I thought, just to finish on the game, I thought Wolves were quite I was quite disappointed with Wolves yesterday, to be honest. I expected to be fair, Newcastle were good for spells, but I thought Wolves didn't really trouble them. Didn't really have a lot in the midfield. I thought they were pretty average, if I'm being honest. I think Big Dawes has got a little bit of work to do there.
I think I think I said a few weeks ago when we were talking about Lopetegui that I honestly don't think he'll be in the job longer than maybe a 12 to 18 months. I think that they, looking at their fixtures, I honestly think they could go down. I don't know, I've just got this feeling. I'm not overly impressed. Yeah, they've had a couple of reasonably impressive wins, but I don't know. I'll be interested to see how they get on the next few weeks, but I'm not convinced by them.
I agree. I don't think he'll be there long term. Not at all. I don't see it with him. And as I say, I was pretty disappointed watching them yesterday. Jamie, then last game of the weekend, Spurs beat Forest 3-1 at home. Pretty comfortable, to be honest, for most of the game. I think Forest had a bit of a spell last 10-15 minutes where they had a go and scored and missed the penalty. But Richarlison's still waiting for that first Spurs goal, and he thought he had it after about 4 or 5 minutes Saturday to VAR to rule it out. I thought this one was a bit harsh. I've got to be honest with you. I watched it a couple of times. Do you know what the big thing with VAR is? See that striker's got to get the benefit of giving the goal.
Offside. Like, I've got no sympathy for Richarlison at all. He spent 3 minutes doing the shush emotion after scoring the goal, and then it got wiped off. And you thought, so he's getting shushed now.
I just felt sorry for him that he ain't scored a goal, and he celebrated for a good 6 minutes, and then it took VAR 10 minutes to give him offside. It was. I'm starting to feel sorry for him, to be honest.
That if anybody, I feel sorry for Danjuma going to Tottenham and literally, I think he's played a bit. I think I said last week he's played something like 54 minutes since he joined. He's really not getting a shot at all. I didn't know it before the game, but there was a lot of talk about Nottingham Forest's absolutely terrible, poor away form. And so when you look at that on contrast of where they were going, I wasn't surprised to see Tottenham actually score and win. What was surprising was that actually they scored more than one goal and they seen it through comfortably, which is probably what Tottenham have been struggling with, is, you know, holding on to leads or just getting nicked after a 0-0. So to score three, they seem to have had a bit of a good day. But even that, you go back to last week when they lost, they still hit the ball something like three or four times. So it wasn't like they were never creating chances. I think Forest were absolutely dreadful from the highlights that I've seen. And I didn't realise the stats were as damning as they were, but it doesn't surprise me at all. I think that's Conte's first win in about a month or something since he's been obviously off. So a much needed win for Tottenham, especially considering after Liverpool dropped points, Tottenham needed that. But I think any sane person would have always put Tottenham on to win that game before it anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I had Spurs 3-0, so the late goal I was a bit gutted with. Graham, you know, Spurs, they're good win for them. Kane double, Son getting on the score sheet. But for Forest, I think last week I said to Jamie and Colin that I seriously think, again, like many, are going to get dragged into this quite quickly. They remain winless in their trips to London, which probably ain't the biggest surprise. But what was your thoughts on Forest, and are they one that you can see sort of going down? I know you just mentioned Wolves there, but what was your thoughts on Forest?
Absolutely, I could see them going down. I'll probably have said, and probably will say that about. I think in my mind, there's five teams that get relegated from the English Premier League that season.
Wacky season indeed.
No, as I look, honestly, it's so enjoyable, and this is why when I look at all the teams, all the fixtures, I really do think I'm like, wow, they could get, yep, they're getting dragged in. Wow, yeah, they're in the poor run of form. Wow, they're really inconsistent. Forest, they had this really good spell more in the middle, I don't know, tail end of last year, start of this year, really good results, looked like they were starting to click, the insane amount of money and player turnover they've had. Suddenly they've won one out of nine in all competitions. They're on really, really poor form. I don't know, they really... It's another one, you don't want to keep saying the same thing, but again, you look at the next two or three games, because how tight it is, they need to start picking up points sooner rather than later, and you just hope if you're them, that gives you that spark. They certainly have a really loyal, good fan base, and the City Ground can certainly get quite raucous, so I think that will be a big help for them. But yeah, like any other team, will be interesting to see how they get on, especially in the next few weeks. So important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Forest's home form has been what's got them where they are at the moment, and there's no doubt about that. Away from home, pretty much just sort of write them off when they go away from home, because their away form has been pretty poor. But Jamie, sorry, I've missed out your favourite team there, Everton. They got a big win against Brentford at the weekend, and reports are it was their most complete performance under Dyche since they beat Arsenal 1-0 as well. Dwight McNeil scored an early goal, and they weren't, you know, as I said, Brentford were pretty poor, but it was a typical Dyche win for them, and question marks with them, because since that sort of little flurry had early on, they've been really poor of late. So that was a big win for them on Saturday.
Yeah, I think I called it last week. The biggest change that's happened in the last three games is that Andre Gray started the match. He's so forward thinking. He runs at defenders. He gets them up the park. He actually had a goal ruled out at the weekend. So that was against McCutton, because I had Brentford on for that as well. So, but Brentford for some reason were really, really shot shy in my opinion. They really didn't look as though they were clicking at all. They let the Everton crowd get on top of them, and just kind of, you know, when Everton get involved, I think the last time they did that was against Arsenal, the crowd get involved in a 12th man, and you just see everything goes Everton's way. I'll say it again, Everton's biggest problem is the fact that every time they pick up a point, so does everybody else. You know, they've got a big win, in my opinion, at the weekend, and I thought, I'm going to have to go on this bloody pod and eat my words. And then I seen Southampton get a point. I seen Bournemouth get three, you know, Bournemouth earlier got the 3 points. You just think, nah, they're still not getting out of this. And I still think that the biggest crush they've got at the moment is that they've played a game more than everybody else around them. And they're only 3 points from the very bottom. So again, Graham's already called it. It's a bit of a wacky season. And it's not wacky because there's crazy results. It's wacky because nobody's tailing off. It's wacky because everybody's taking points off each other. And I think that's going to be Everton's biggest downfall going into the end of the season.
No, absolutely. I do think, I'm going to throw my neck on the line here, I do think Everton will stay up just about. Graham, what's your thoughts on that? And also the goal scorer, Dwight McNeil. Great finish, but just doesn't do it enough.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when we speak about a poor form at Everton. They didn't win in three, but they've had seven league games under Sean Dyche, and now at 21 points, they've taken 10 points. Fourth game at Goodison under Dyche, that's a third 1-0 win. It is the most Sean Dyche thing I've ever seen. three wins out of four, three clean sheets. Everton are going to be absolutely brand new. And I think especially going into next season, looking at what Dyche did with Burnley at home, I honestly believe that Everton will push mid-table and above next season. Happy for you to quote me on that, purely because, you know, just going by a lot of ex-players that have played in the Premier League, nine out of ten say Goodison's the hardest place to go, especially the crowd behind them, and the way Dyche gets Everton playing, they're going to be so unbelievably hard to beat, and I think that's what it's going to be for the rest of the season. So Everton are going to be fine. I do not see them going down. I think they will start to pull away. I get what Jamie's saying about other teams picking up points, but as I say, they've picked up 10 out of the last 21. If you keep that going, they'll breeze it, to be honest, and I do think they will.
I think it's more the next three fixtures. They've got Chelsea, Tottenham, and then Man U back-to-back. And I think, you know, if other teams do pick up around them, it's that whole trying to kick the gear again into it and try and start it again and get that form back on if they don't take anything from them.
Yeah, I do get that, but I honestly don't think that's going to absolutely plummet their motivation or their morale. I think, yeah, they'll go into those games, they'll maybe have a target of picking up a couple of points, but I think they'll look at the long game for the rest of the season rather than the immediate targets. And I think, yeah, that even if they don't pick up those points, they're already in a relegation dogfight, so to speak. So I think they will. I think they'll be one of the ones that you'll see pull away sooner rather than later.
And they've got Bournemouth on the last game of the season. That could be the dogfight.
Bournemouth will be down already.
Patrick Vieira will be the manager of Bournemouth.
They must have been sort of still so flat at 5 o'clock Saturday night, where they've just got a big win, but also Bournemouth have just beaten Liverpool as well.
It happened when they beat Arsenal. They beat Arsenal, and then everybody else around them got 3 points, and they just think, he's a break, you know. So,
even yesterday with Southampton getting a point at Old Trafford, that would have been nailed on there. United, oh, we'll win that. We'll start pulling away from them. Then bang. But that's just the Premier League this season. And gents, that is the, you know, all the games we've got through. But as always, we finish on a little question to ourselves, and hopefully all the listeners can give us what they think as well. And this week's question is, who has the toughest run from 12th to 20th, running from 12th to 20th? There's 5 points from 12th to 20th, which is absolute nuts. So, Jamie, thanks for coming on tonight. Who do you think has got the toughest fixtures? You know, who are you looking at going there in banging trouble with?
I think Bournemouth, because they're so erratic with how they go about their game, whether it's keeping clean sheets or whether it's actually scoring goals. For some reason, Bournemouth have just always stuck there for me. I think Southampton, the fixtures are going to work against them. I picked them up early and said that they've done really, really well. It's just how long is that going to continue for? And, you know, looking on paper, Palace have got a tough run of fixtures, but I think it's only tough if they don't start winning them. I think Leicester could be the one that could get dragged into. We say Leicester are dragged into this, but I think unless they start putting points on board, I think Leicester have got in the last three fixtures: Liverpool, Newcastle, and West Ham. If they don't get themselves secure, that's pretty much going to be a tough one for them.
Yeah, and I'm just having a look through again myself before I sort of give my... Graham, what, thanks again for coming on tonight, mate. What's your thoughts on these fixtures? Who are you looking at going there? They're absolutely done.
I guess, like, despite me probably saying five or six teams are absolutely done, like I said, I do honestly looking at the fixtures, and you're talking about the last 12 games, 11 for... for Everton, Forest really do have it tough for those last 12. You kind of got, of course, they're playing the least teams in this seven-team relegation dogfight, so to speak, but, I mean, they've got Chelsea away, Arsenal home, you've got Liverpool away, Man United, Villa away, Newcastle next game. Brentford or no mean feat away from home, I really do think that just looking at that, they could go down as it's so hard. Like you just don't know. Anyone pulls a bit of form, but I think Forrest are looking like the toughest, certainly running from my point of view. I think if you are Crystal Palace, you're looking favourably at theirs. However, when you're on their form, what does it matter?
There's some belters of last days that potentially could work out, because you've got Palace and Forest, you've got Everton and Bournemouth, you've got Leicester and West Ham. Like if they are not clear come that point, you know, that last day of the season, yeah, that should be fun.
What a running we've got here, by the way. What a running. Never mind the top four, top five, top six. It's all about this. This is where it's all happening. I agree with both of you, Spanish boys. If I had to pick sort of anyone's fixtures out, well, I'd be quite worried, would probably be Forest and Southampton. If I was sort of looking at it going, I think you're going to struggle. But then you could make a case for everyone else. As we've already touched on tonight, Palace continue not getting shots on goal. They're banging trouble. So, yeah, listeners, get your comments in. Who do you see, going down, and how do you think it's going to pan out? As I said, the top end of it, still a lot to play for. But tonight we've mainly touched on the relegation battle. So we'll be with you next week to go through next week's fixtures as well. Just like to thank my two guests for tonight. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Take care.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.